You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for December 20th, 2017. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news, including a bright sequel, The Shape of Water gets an Oscar snub, It Director's Cut, Artemis Fowl casting, a What We Do in the Shadows TV spinoff, why Lando and Obi-Wan weren't in Star Wars Last Jedi, and I'll share with you some of the deleted scenes from that film. And at the water cooler, we'll be talking about the TV series Happy, and HT is doing a 2017 animated films catch-up marathon. This is Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Guys, join me over here at the water cooler. We can talk about some of the stuff we've been up to. I know we haven't had one of these since I think last week. I haven't been up to much. I've been head deep in all these Star Wars Last Jedi books. You know, there's an art of book, there's a visual dictionary, and while a lot of it I'm using for work, you know, you'll see a write-up of the visual dictionary tomorrow on the site, and you've definitely already seen a bunch of information that's come from the art of book on the site. These books are just amazing. You know, if you're a fan of this movie or even Star Wars, I highly recommend you check these out. The art of book is just... even for The Force Awakens, these books are the closest that we're going to get to like a making of the movie. Like, it really gives you an idea of the evolution of the story and the visuals of the film. And there's just so many great pieces of art in there. The visual dictionary, which is written by Pablo Hidalgo, who's of the Lucasfilm Story Group, that is, you know, it's a more like probably something you could give a kid, but it has lots of cool canon explanations for things that might not make it in the movie. You know, you get a map there of the galaxy showing you where Octu is in relation to everything. By the way, it's close to Dagobah, which is, it seems weird that it's closer to Dagobah than it is to Jedha, which we saw in Rogue One. But anyways, I will get into all that tomorrow on the site. I also last night watched the first two episodes for the sci-fi TV series Happy. Have either of you guys heard about this show?
I have not.
I've heard about it, and I saw the trailer, and I thought it looked cool. I just haven't watched it yet.
Now, I usually avoid sci-fi TV series because generally they aren't that great. I hate to paint, you know, a whole network with a broad stroke, but I will in this case. But, you know, I saw the trailer for this and it you know, sucked me in. Happy is from one of the directors of Crank, Brian Taylor, I think. Brian Taylor. So if you've ever seen Crank, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into. This is like an insane, crazy, you know, not just the style, but the premise and the characters are all kind of, you know, if you could turn it up to 16, it's turned up to 16. And it's a story about a former cop turned hitman who, you know, I don't want to spoil too much for anybody, but at some point, an animated blue flying horse voiced by Patton Oswalt appears to him. And it's the story of him trying to solve the abduction of a girl. And this is his the girl's imaginary friend named Happy. So I know that sounds really weird. The style of this is very, you know, I love that we're getting these kind of crazy TV shows recently with, you know, like the guy that did Fargo and Legion, and we have SML doing, you know, Mr. Robot. It's kind of in that kind of realm. So if you like that kind of crazy, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next kind of thing, this is definitely for you. And I've only seen the first two episodes, but it's very enjoyable. And I would say make it to the end of the first episode. That's when I think it kind of, you know, figures out its way. But yeah, I would recommend it. I've only seen the first two episodes, so I can't highly recommend it. But I'm going to keep on watching. HT, what have you been up to?
So I've been working on this sort of wrap-up of the 2017 animated movies. And in the process, I've been binging a lot of the films that came out this year, which are not great. The sole exception being Coco, but the rest of the mainstream animated films from this year have been pretty abysmal. And I went through this one day where I just marathoned the Emoji Movie, Smurfs, and I think, what other film did I watch? I think it was Captain Underpants, and I felt myself, my soul slowly slipping out of my body. It was just, I've come to the conclusion after watching a lot of these films that Hollywood hates children, and it's really saddening to me because
Hollywood thinks children are dumb.
Or they hate children. That too, but We've seen a lot of films recently that have treated children and have treated family movies as an opportunity to tell moving stories that appeal to all generations, like Coco, like a lot of Pixar and some Disney films. But the films that have come out this year have not quite been up to par with those stories. Although I did watch Ferdinand yesterday and was kind of pleasantly surprised. That was the John Cena bull movie, and while there is a really, really long dance sequence in which some horses dab, the movie actually holds up pretty okay. But I think I'm kind of at the end of the tunnel in which I'm like, you know what? Anything is good at this point. But it has the structure of a classic sort of Disney film, and actually got a bit heartwarming towards the end. So that and Cars 3 and Coco are kind of the lone bright spots in terms of like the mainstream animated films. All the other good quality animated films are not really in Hollywood right now. They're out in foreign films or in indie theaters. So those are going to be a little bit harder to get my hands on.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you seen Breadwinner yet? I haven't seen it myself, but I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, I have it on my list, but I haven't been able to see it. It's sad, actually, because I know Breadwinner came out earlier this year, and it's just been almost impossible to find it now that it's out of theaters.
Let me see if I can get a screener for you. I think I can maybe arrange that.
Awesome. Yeah, there's another movie, Loving Vincent, which is up for the Oscar animated shortlist right now, and it's in theaters at the moment. But the other ones that are sort of have a glimmer of hope for the animation in 2017 are really hard to get their hands on, except for anime. I want to give a shout out to the Japanese film In This Corner of the World, which was a phenomenal World War II movie that was one of the most beautifully animated movies I've seen in recent memory, and the best World War II anime film I've seen since Grave of the Fireflies. It was just so affecting and heart-wrenching. So that was a great film. But yeah, nothing has been really great in the American animated landscape recently, which really saddened me.
Yeah, I saw Coco for the third time this week, and not because I love it, just my girlfriend Kitra had not seen it, and I had seen it two times before that, once for the junket, once a unfinished cut of the film many months ago. And that film, it grows on me every single time I see it. And not that I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but it gets better the more you see it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyways, let's jump into the news. And first up in the news is Netflix has announced that they are doing a Bright sequel. Chris, what is going on here?
Yeah, so Bright, which is the new Netflix movie starring Will Smith, directed by David Ayer and written by Max Landis, it drops onto Netflix this Friday, the 22nd, but already ahead of that, Netflix has already ordered a sequel with Will Smith in it, which would make this the first Netflix franchise, which is just strange to think about that. That's going to exist now, just the Netflix franchise. So they're apparently very happy with this. They think it's going to be, you know, a hit for their viewers. And I guess we'll see. I remain a little skeptical because from the trailers, at least, I think Bright looks terrible. But I guess we'll see.
They screened it for press this week, but I have not talked to anybody that actually went to the screening. So I don't know how it did. I know that the embargo breaks later tonight. So, you know, maybe even by the time you're listening to this, you can check out the article on slashfilm.com rounding up the early buzz. But we'll have to see. I'd be shocked if it's good, at least from the footage I've seen.
I don't really have any hopes for Bright. It just looks like a film that is not for me. So I don't really know why it's already in the works for a sequel, except Netflix has a tendency to sort of, put trust in their creators ahead of time. So I guess that's the case with the Bright sequel.
It's weird, though. They even waited a month or two to announce the Stranger Things, you know, too, after, you know, the hit of Stranger Things was. So it just seems so weird that they're already in development on this sequel and it hasn't even been released. And who knows what the reaction is going to be from from Netflix subscribers. But let's talk about a snub. Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water, which is an incredible film, has already been snubbed by the Oscars. HT, tell me it's not so.
So The Shape of Water was one of the films that did not make the shortlist for best makeup and hairstyling for the Oscars. So this is not the complete finalized list yet, but this is a shortlist that comprises of seven films, one of which actually includes Bright. So David Ayer and his films have a good streak right now going on with the Oscars and best makeup. So the films that are in contention are Bright, Darkest Hour, Ghost in the Shell, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I, Tonya, Victoria and Abdul, and Wonder. And while some of these films do have some impressive makeup and effects, it's a little strange that The Shape of Water, which hinges on this one really gorgeously done creature underneath pounds of makeup and special effects and practical effects, is not in the running for it. It seems like a shoe-in for Shape of Water, but for some reason it's been snubbed.
That whole movie hinges on Doug Jones's makeup, mm-hmm. like to make it believable. Like it looks so good.
Like it looks beautiful.
That is a shame.
Yeah, it's odd because, his character doesn't speak a word. So, it depends really heavily on the design of the creature, and it's made to sort of convince the audience that Eliza is falling in love with the fish man, the amphibian man. And without that makeup and without the stellar work that Guillermo del Toro's team is doing, it would not have worked. So it's a very strange snub.
Was it not eligible for some reason, or did they just literally just snub it?
I don't know about eligibility.
It's so strange. I'm just wondering if there was some sort of Because every now and then the Academy has like weird rules where they disqualify things for certain reasons. And I'm wondering if that happened for some reason, but I don't know what it would be.
I'm wondering because it's a combination of visual effects and practical makeup, if that has something to do with it. Do you know what I mean?
That could be. Maybe they don't categorize it as wholly makeup. Yeah. So that could be the reason.
Yeah.
Because it's part sculpted too.
Oh, for sure. And when it came out, we were talking about a possible director's cut getting released. Now we have word it's going to be released in 2018. Chris, you wrote this up for the site. What do we know?
Yeah, so it is now available on digital HD, and the Blu-ray is coming in January. And both those releases, they have 11 deleted scenes on them, but the director, Andy Muschietti, confirmed that there's actually a director's cut in works, which I guess will be cutting all those deleted scenes back into the film. He didn't say when, he just said it'll be available in a few months. So I guess Warner Brothers, they're going to be double dipping on this, where they're going to release a Blu-ray and then they're going to release yet another Blu-ray with a director's cut on it in a few months from now.
It's not like they haven't done that before with the Lord of the Rings trilogy and many other movies. I'd be interested to see it. I was a fan of it. I have a feeling, though, if you add more to that film, it might feel a little bit long. It already starts to feel a little bit long in the theatrical cut. But I'm curious. Next up in the news, we have some casting for Artemis Fowl. Now, I don't know anything about Artemis Fowl. So, HD, give me some knowledge here.
So Artemis Fowl is a children's book by Erwin Colfer, who is an Irish author, and it was a book that I grew up reading, and even past my high school years when Erwin Colfer kept publishing books, I followed up with the series, and it's a children's series, but it sort of deals with some more mature themes. It follows this 12-year-old boy genius who is manipulative and a little bit cruel, who embarks on the scheme to kidnap an elf and ransom her for millions of dollars in gold so that he can find his missing father. So it's interesting because the protagonist, the title character, is actually sort of the villain in the story. He's the kidnapper who tries to ransom elves, which he discovers exists underground. They have this whole underground society made up of elves, fairies, centaurs, and there's some fun wordplay too, because the elf he captures is actually a member of the LEP Recon, which, you know, is a fun wordplay off of leprechaun, and like the leprechaun and the gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting in that it deals with mythology and fantasy, but in a more modern urban fantasy type of way. And this movie has sort of been in talks and in the works for a while, but now Kenneth Branagh will be helming the movie for Disney. And he has cast his title character with an Irish newcomer named Ferdia Shaw after seeing more than 1,200 child actors for the part. And it's a pretty star-studded supporting cast, too. Judi Dench will be playing Commander Root, who leads the LEP Recon police force. And Commander Root was actually originally a male character, so it's a really fun gender-bend role for her part. And Josh Gad will be joining as this morally ambiguous thief dwarf named Mulch. And Nanzo Anazi will be Butler, who is Artemis's bodyguard. And then the other main character is played by child actress Lara McDonnell. So I'm really excited for this film. I have been waiting for this live action adaptation since Harry Potter first came into theater. So it feels like a long time coming, but it's kind of a difficult story to tackle, especially when your hero is so, or your protagonist is so unsympathetic. And I don't know how well it will sort of play over with Disney, which has a sort of tendency to make things much more familiar and pleasant. So I hope that it will keep some of its teeth. But I think the gender bending of Judi Dench's character is a really great start, and I am excited for the film. I'm a little sad that my fan cast, my original fan cast was Asa Butterfield for the title character, is no longer viable. But this film is finally happening, so can't wait for that.
And of course, they're Disney-fying it by putting Josh Gad on the cast because, yes. I mean, he has to be in every Disney movie, right?
So he's in everything now.
Yeah. Next up in the news, we've been talking about the What We Do in the Shadows, spawning a bunch of these TV spinoffs. You know, obviously they're going to do one with the werewolves, but there's another spinoff in the works and it's coming to TV in 2018. Chris, what do we know?
Yeah, so in What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire mockumentary, there's a pretty funny scene where two cops show up at the flat where all the vampires live to investigate, you know, a disturbance. So those two cops are getting their own spin-off show. It's called Wellington Paranormal, and it's coming to it's coming to New Zealand TV in 2018, and I assume that means we in the U.S. will get it sometime after that.
If not airing at the same time, maybe Netflix or one of those channels will pick it up to distribute internationally, I'm sure.
Right, but, yeah.
I guess the question is there enough there in that plot of, you know, the cops? I don't know. Like, I could definitely see, like, a spinoff with, you know, the werewolves or even a, you know, they're doing a television adaptation of basically the story that was in the movie. But is there enough there for the cop storyline?
I guess it could work. I mean, they're describing it as sort of like a mockumentary X-Files, where every episode the cops are investigating a new paranormal event. So I think it could work. I mean, the scene in the film is very funny. So, you know, it's the same actors from who played the cops in the film. So I think they'll make it work. I mean, I don't think they can get like multiple seasons out of this, but for like a few episodes. It's going to be 6 episodes total, so I think that's probably enough to make it work. I think any more than that, it's going to start stretching its premise.
Now, I love Taika Waititi, and I like this movie a lot, but, you know, this movie wasn't a big moneymaker at the box office. Is this going to be, like, the first movie of that level to spawn, like, 3 television adaptations in a sequel? Like, it seems kind of crazy.
Yeah, it does. I guess it just has a big enough like cult following at this point that people are willing to, you know, do all these spinoffs. I also think, you know, they're relatively inexpensive to make, you know, because, you know, they have the mockumentary angle. And even though there are a few special effects, it's not really like a huge big budget production. So I guess that alone is enough to convince people to keep, you know, funding these spinoffs.
Okay, so right now we're about to talk about Star Wars: The Last Jedi, and I think we're going to get into a little bit of spoilers. So if you have not seen Star Wars: The Last Jedi, you can pause this now, come back to it after you have. But let's get into some news on Star Wars: The Last Jedi. Rian Johnson's out and about doing press, and he's kind of talked about why Obi-Wan Kenobi isn't in the movie and why Lando Calrissian was almost going to be in the movie.
Rian Johnson said that he would have loved to have both of those characters in the film, but they just did not fit into the structure that he made. Obi-Wan, especially because the only actor who is available to play him right now is Ewan McGregor, who played a young version of Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels. And while Rian Johnson said that he would have loved to have Ewan McGregor in one of his films, he did not think that it was right for the moment in which Luke Skywalker's kind of, you know, isolated and unmoored and not able to take the right path. And Yoda is the one who urges him to sort of kick back into gear. And in that case, Obi-Wan would have played a great part. But because Alec Guinness is no longer here, he could not have really brought him back.
Could have brought him back with McGregor. Right?
He could have. Maybe he could have aged him up. But at this point, Rian Johnson said, we never saw Luke ever interact with the Ewan version of Obi-Wan. So there's less of an emotional connection, and it might have been a little odd. It's kind of similar to how we saw the young Anakin Skywalker Force Ghost in the re-releases of Return of the Jedi. And that was always a little odd because why do we have a young Hayden Christensen when Luke never knew his father as a young man? So that's something I think that works out for the better.
Yeah, and there is a precedent of that. Like, Rian Johnson, the reason why he chose a puppet Yoda in Last Jedi is because that's the Yoda that Luke knew. You know, mm-hmm. so they didn't do a CG Yoda because of that. But how about Lando? Like, everybody was expecting Lando to show up. Billy Dee Williams. Why did Lando not show up in this movie?
So Rian Johnson said that he briefly considered having Lando play the part that Benicio del Toro's DJ eventually ends up playing, which is that morally ambiguous hacker who eventually betrays the group. And it's reminiscent of Lando's original role in Empire Strikes Back. But Rian Johnson said, because we love Lando and you kind of come into it with that expectation, but we already know that we love the character of Lando, so it just wouldn't have played that part story-wise, summarizing what he said. So it seems like it would have been redundant for Lando's character, and there may be like future plans for Lando in later films. So I think that he thought Lando would be redundant and just thought to introduce a new character completely would be better.
Yeah, it would have seemed more like a rehash of Empire Strikes Back, I think, with Lando in there. I have a whole article up on the site about the deleted scenes of Star Wars Last Jedi. I have been working for the last 3 weeks on this article. This is exclusive material that you can't find anywhere else. I would really recommend going to the site and checking it out, because I have like over a dozen pieces that were taken out of the film. But I'll talk about one here just right now. And by the way, the first cut of the film was 3 hours and 10 minutes long. So there's like 40 minutes of material that was cut out of the film. I think Rian Johnson has said 20 minutes of material, deleted scenes, will make it onto the DVD/Blu-ray. I think the scene that everybody that is definitely going to be on there, and this is the scene that I think is the most interesting, is Luke Skywalker's third lesson to Rey, because he says he's going to give her three lessons, and we only see two in the movie. What happened was there was a third lesson, and this lesson took place chronologically after they talk inside the cave where Luke mentions Darth Sidious. What happens is Rey notices these boats arriving at the island, and there appears to be a big fire from where they're landing. Luke tells her that there's a group of bandits who regularly come to the island and pillage and plunder and kill the caretakers. Rey is very concerned and wants to help them, but Luke tells her that if you help them now, the raiders will come back stronger and it will make things worse in the future. He basically says, you know, are you always going to be here for them, or are you going to make it worse for them? Explaining that the Jedi code is to not interfere in this kind of situation. You know, you got to maintain balance. And this, of course, infuriates Rey, who ignites her lightsaber and does this force run, which we saw in that first featurette. I'm not sure if you remember, but it was Rey like running through the water with the lightsaber. That's not in the movie. And she runs over to where the fire is. She bursts in, and it ends up being like this big party, a big celebration with the caretakers. And they all like stop, you know, singing and dancing or whatever they're doing. And they kind of look at her strange. And there's kind of a funny moment there. Chewbacca's there with the pork. R2-D2 is like spinning some lights on Chewie, and Rey's like, seriously? And, you know, she's now more mad at Luke. And she confronts Luke, and basically he admits that he's sorry. And Rey says that she thought they were in danger and was trying to do something. Luke responds, seriously, that this is the exactly what the Resistance needs, not some old husk of a failed religion. They need, you know, someone to respond and do something. And, you know, obviously, this is the third lesson he's trying to teach her. But this brings Rey to tears, and she explains that the only real friends she has are dying. And, quote, the old legend of Luke Skywalker that you hate so much, I believed in it. Luke is in shock, realizing what he's done. Rey runs off. This is the whole reason for why Rey leaves Octu and goes to see Kylo. which is something I had a problem with in the actual film. I felt like there wasn't enough motivation to make her make that kind of stupid decision to like, yeah, I'm going to go right to the bad guys. And because that's my best plan of attack. I feel like emotionally this would have been good to have in the film. But apparently, from what I understand, Luke came off as too much of a dick in these scenes. So it was cut. And also, even though it was approved by the Lucasfilm Star Wars Story Group, in execution, the Jedi way, even though it was accurate to the Jedi way, it seemed like it wasn't accurate to the Jedi way. So I guess that's another reason why it was cut. But you could see a lot of the concept art in the art of The Force Awakens, which I mentioned earlier, and you can see it in my piece on slashfilm.com. What do you guys think of this scene?
That makes it sound like I didn't like it. It's interesting. I would have liked to see, I think, part of that third lesson, but I do think it probably would have been too far in terms of how it portrayed Luke's character. I think that the reason that Rey runs off works for me because she has at that point felt sort of betrayed that Luke didn't tell her the whole story about how Kylo turned and how his temple was destroyed. And even though he explains to her, she feels more urgent in terms of like how Kylo can be saved and that she can sort of end it here. So that works for me in terms of like how the story finally plays out. Yeah, I think that the idea of the party seems a little bit like extraneous because we already have so many moments of hilarity that undercut a lot of scenes. So I'm not sure how that would have played out in the final film.
Yeah, and I also learned in the book, the visual dictionary, that basically all the caretakers we see on the island are women, and the men go out to sea and actually, you know, fish and get the food that they live off of. And once a month, they return to the island, and they have this big festival, which is a celebration, which we would have saw here, which basically them returning, everybody eating, and some romance and all that stuff. But it's not in the movie. One other thing I want to say is I think one of the things that this film wasn't successful on is I think Rian Johnson was trying to make Luke kind of like a little bit more of a jokester, kind of like Yoda was in Empire Strikes Back, kind of like, you know, this guy that's been kind of by himself for so long and is kind of a jokester but doesn't know what's funny and what's not. And I think, you know, some stuff like the lightsaber toss and other stuff. And this, I think, like, you know, him joking about this fire thing, I think it probably didn't work in execution. Chris, is this something you would have liked to see in the movie or not?
Yeah, I'm on record as saying I really liked The Last Jedi. But all these deleted scenes I've read about, they sound really cool. They sound like they would make it an even better movie. You know, I get that, you know, if they had left them all in, the film would have been even longer than it is now, but I really do hope we get some sort of director's cut, or at the very least, you know, they're all included on a Blu-ray release, just because I really want to see all these scenes. They sound very interesting and they sound like they'll actually make the film even better than it is now.
Yeah. And, I'll have an interview with the editor next week at some point, which you'll be able to read, and maybe we'll post it on here, which is interesting to hear how this stuff gets decided. But it's interesting because I don't think since George Lucas there has been a, you know, quote unquote director's cut of a Star Wars film. And I wonder if Disney would ever allow that, because I would even like to see, you know, The Force Awakens had some scenes in it that like didn't make the DVD, even the deleted scenes that I think would make that movie better. I would love to see, you know, I know fans are going to cringe, but I would love to see special editions of these movies. But, a side note, Rian Johnson moved the scar on Kylo Ren's face. Why not go back and move that in J.J. Abrams' movie?
How far did he move it? Did he just like put it more in the center of his eye?
You know, I'd have to show you photos, but he moved it, like, I think originally it was across the nose or something. Mm. Yeah, I'd have to show you a photo of that. But
now it's a sexy scar.
Yeah, I think he just wanted it, it just, like, looked weird. He thought it looked weird. It wasn't, like, any story reason. So anyways, I'm not beyond a special edition of these movies. You know, after the trilogy is out, I'm sure, you know, they'll want to re-release them in some way. And maybe we'll see that. But please head over to slashfilm.com and check out my article, Star Wars Last Jedi, Deleted Scenes, Everything We Know. It contains 11 more scenes that were not in the movie, some of which will not be on the DVD. So check it out there. This does it for Slash Film Daily for today. Chris, where can we find more of your work online?
I'm at slashfilm.com and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413.
HT, where can we find you?
I'm at slashfilm.com. I'm on Twitter at htranbui, and you can find my podcast, The Millennial Falcon Podcast, on iTunes.
You can find me at slashfilm.com, at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find all the articles we talked about today on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. Slash Film Daily, this podcast, is published almost every weekday at iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. We also publish it on slashfilm.com. If you could please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Spread the word, tell your friends, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.